Welcome to the second episode of the Back to the Point podcast. I'm here with my co-host Damian Smith, and we're here to touch on the Pittsburgh Penguins 2016-2017 Stanley Cup win overview. To get us started, the Pittsburgh Penguins were trying to do something in that year that hasn't been done in 19 years. I mean, to repeat as Stanley Cup champions. How does that sound, Damian?
Repeating Stanley Cup champions, I mean, that's really hard to do. You saw that the success that Chicago had in the from 2010 to, was it 2015? Three cups in 6 years, but to actually do it back-to-back is like, I think I would say that's a little more impressive. I wouldn't call it dynasty or anything, but they definitely did come close, so respect to them.
I mean, with no team having to do that in 19 years, the Pens were trying to do something that hasn't been done in a very long time. I mean, going into this, they beat the Ottawa Senators with a 3-2 overtime win in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. Damian, I'm pretty sure you hate to hear that because that's your team, but sorry for that. What was really interesting during this time is the Pittsburgh Penguins didn't make any moves after beating the San Jose Sharks in the final in 2015-2016. I mean, the only forward, Bo Bennett and Eric Fehr, were traded, with Ben Lovejoy and Jeff Zatkoff leaving as free agents. Also, what was very interesting is after all the injuries that the Penguins suffered throughout the season, the one thing that they really relied on was depth throughout the lineup. They had Chris Letang missing with 41 games in the regular season and the entire postseason. Olli Mato with 27. Trevor Daley with 26. Like, that's three key defensemen that they had in that prime year, which was very disappointing to have. So they had to rely on other players in the lineup to be able to carry the team through the playoffs into the Stanley Cup final. I mean, how hard do you think it was to be able to do as well as they did with all these injuries that they had to keep facing throughout this era?
Well, yeah, like the one that you can definitely pick out is Letang. I mean, he's been an elite defenseman for how long? Like 12 years now at this point? Yeah, so you had him in 2016, right? But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's gone. He was out for the entire playoffs. So all of a sudden they had to count on just a bunch of defensemen. And honestly, they played it out perfectly because they didn't really have a defenseman that, like, I think that they counted on too much in general. So, I mean, if we look at the playoffs here, I'm just going to look at time on ice for defensemen. So, Brian Dumoulin had the most ice time with 22 minutes, right? That's not an insane amount. It's not like Chris Letang's probably playing, like, 25, 26 minutes a night, I would say. And they spread it out. So, like, Dumoulin, 22. Ron Hainsey, right? Ron Hainsey's like 35 at this point. He plays 21 minutes. Olli Mata, 20 minutes. Justin Schultz, 20 minutes. Trevor Daley, 19. And Ian Cole, 19. Those are your top six defensemen. They're all playing like perfectly equal minutes. I mean, I guess you could say Dumoulin's playing a couple more, but at that point, like, they rounded out perfectly. So props to them on that.
And it's weird, too. Not only did they have these, like, key defensemen missing with throughout injuries, but they also had another, I mean, they call Crosby, Letang, Malkin, like the three-headed monster duo. Yeah. They also had Malkin missing with 20 games.
True, right?
Yeah, I mean, and goaltender Matt Murray, who missed the first 3 weeks of the season and two rounds of the playoffs. I mean, they also had their number one goaltender missing, which that's a lot of key players to miss throughout the lineup. To move forward with this, my take is, like, the reason why they beat the Nashville Predators in the Stanley Cup final. After when the Pittsburgh Penguins fired head coach Mike Johnson, and with the new rehiring of new head coach Mike Sullivan, he kind of established this certain hockey game identity that he wanted the Pittsburgh Penguins to follow. Basically, since he took over as head coach in December 12th of 2015, the Penguins finished with 50 wins, 21 loss, and 11 OT, which was second in the Metropolitan Division with 87 wins, 37 loss during his time in Pittsburgh so far. Also, during when they played the Nashville Predators, Crosby during the regular season had 89 points with 44 goals and 45 assists. Then also center of Evgeny Malkin finishing with 72 points, 33 goals, and 39 assists. And also, I mean, good old Phil Kessel with 70 points, which is something we need to touch on. 23 goals and 47 assists to lead the offense.
They had a lot of injuries, though. Like, Kessel's basically the only player who played 82 games. Crosby missed 7 games. Malkin missed 20. Malkin's always going to miss games, though.
Yeah, like Sherry, it's a common thing.
Hornqvist, like Gensel. I mean, he was brought up later, but...
Also, something we have to mention, too, is, like, Justin Schultz was a surprising factor, who had an NHL career high in points. I mean, he finished with 51 points, 12 goals, and 39 assists.
He came in, like, at the perfect time to step in because, I mean, you lose Letang. Okay, you lose a bunch of offense there. All of a sudden, you put in Schultz into the lineup for, like, the entire year. And especially in the playoffs, he was a really clutch player. I mean, 13 points in 21 games. Not incredible, but, like, he ran that for his power play, and, like, he did his job. So, yeah, I mean, also, like, in the regular season, Schultz had a career high in points, I believe, that year. Like, this was peak Justin Schultz. He fit in really well to Pittsburgh. I think he should have stayed there. I mean, I know they didn't sign him after, what was it, 2020, I believe. But you're seeing him now. He's not really, like, an everyday defenseman with the Capitals. And Justin Schultz that year, 51 points in 78 games, plus 27 as well. So,
and he just really fit in with, like, Mike Sullivan's, like, game identity, like, through press conferences that I would overhear when Mike Sullivan came to Pittsburgh. It was always about, like, him establishing, like, this game identity that he wanted all of the players to follow and, like, to stay with the system. Cause he said if they didn't stay with the system, then they're not going to succeed. And coming into Pittsburgh, what does Mike Sullivan do? He becomes a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion. So it's not only credit to the players, but also, like, the coaching staff and Mike Sullivan for doing an incredible job with the organization. That's something I really wanted to touch on. And also, like, Jake Guentzel, he was, like, the rookie forward coming in. I remember when Jake Guentzel first started his career with him scoring hit 2 goals in his first game, and his parents were there. Like, it was all over, like, TSN and Sportsnet. His parents in the stands just like waving in celebration and so happy to, like, see the smiles on their faces, like, for their son. It was such an incredible moment. And that was kind of the leap to start Jake Guentzel's career. And now on the top line with one of the best players, Sidney Crosby, of this generation. So incredible to see. Then also something else we need to touch on in this episode is, like, nothing other than Flower. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, who came in to place Matt Murray to help them advance to the conference final when Matt Murray went down injured, and then Fleury had to come in relief, and he was nothing but incredible. So
that was tough because, like, Fleury was kind of struggling too, low key, in the playoffs. And, like, I remember the Sens, and what was it, Game 3? They, like, destroyed them 5-1, and so they had to pull Fleury, and they put in Murray, and, like, Murray just went beast mode and, like, won the next. I guess it would have been 3 of the next 5 games to win that series, and I mean, it went right down to the wire, but he was, like, the deciding factor pretty much. Because, honestly, if Fleury stayed in that series, maybe the Sens might have squeaked out the win in the end.
Yeah, I mean, when I touch on this, like, the best move not made throughout this whole thing was Marc-Andre Fleury. So for Jim Rutherford to, like, have this potential and to have to keep Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray, it definitely paid off. I mean, he relied on these goaltenders. I mean, you can rely on Marc-Andre Fleury with the amount of experience that he has, and he used him in the most critical moments and the best moments to get the job done. And then him kind of teaching Matt Murray, kind of like starting off Matt Murray's career, like Matt Murray to look up to an inspiration such as Marc-Andre Fleury. Such a rookie. So to have these two guys to get the job done is really what helped the Pittsburgh Penguins to win the Stanley Cup in 2016-2017. Fleury ended up having to fill in, like I said, for Matt Murray when he was injured during warmups before Pittsburgh's first round opener against Columbus. Fleury went 9 wins, 6 losses. Hear this, with a 2.56 goals against average and a 0.924 save percentage. So that just says how well Marc-Andre Fleury played during the playoffs. And he also got 2 shutouts and 15 starts, obviously, before Murray ended up coming in midway through the series against Ottawa.
I don't think I've seen a tandem that strong before, though, because I remember they were talking about, it's like, legit both goalies could be starters on, like, most teams. You have, like, a young, I think he was 23 at that point, goalie in Murray, who's been incredibly successful. And then you also have Fleury, who's been around forever. So you have these two, like, legit starting goalies that are pretty much consistent, right? So it's not like you're going to have to go back and forth and back and forth every single game, because they have these strengths and they can be put into any position anytime and just do well. And that always gave them, like, a chance to win pretty much every game that they had.
And for the coaching staff and Jim Rutherford and Mike Sullivan, they had the absolute like belief in both of these goaltenders, mm-hmm. in Fleury and Matt Murray. So to have both goaltenders, with Fleury having a lot of experience and knowing how to keep his team in the game during the most important moments, and definitely when the stakes are high, you know you can trust in Fleury to get the job done. Also showcasing Murray to look up to one of the best goaltenders of all time, and to learn from him succeeding in Murray's game playing, that, like, I think looking at Fleury helped Matt Murray also get the job done and to be really critical, mm-hmm. in the most important moments of each series. So when he got back from his injury, of course. Another best move made was a rookie Jake Guentzel, like we just talked about earlier, him starting his career, scoring two goals in his first game ever in his NHL career, and with his parents in celebration. This kind of was like the leap in Jake Guentzel's hockey career, and now not even that, but he's also now on the top line for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
But he's been there forever, though. He's never gone off Crosby's wing, I don't think.
No, and for him to be like this, like this is like the leap for him to have been on the top line and to succeed as well as he did. I mean, basically in that era, it was kind of like with the absence of Evgeny Malkin in the final weeks of the season, his game went to a whole another level. I mean, as head coach Mike Sullivan paired him up on the top line with Sidney Crosby, Guentzel had 16 points, 9 goals, and 7 assists in 19 postseason games, and tied for the goal-scoring lead in the playoffs with Anaheim Ducks forward Jacob Silverberg. I mean, you see how beneficial it is now as this line now with Rust alongside them just keeps getting better and better every year. Like, it's like they're just relentless and they are unstoppable. It's like Crosby is so good with his edge work, and then you have them playing. It's like Crosby, Guentzel, and Rust have been playing together for years. Mm-hmm. All the chemistry that they have built throughout these like few years and these seasons, it's like no matter who has the puck, they know how to get it into the right spot for one another. How I talk about it is like they know the play ahead of time, and it's this identity of like no hesitation on where each of them go on the ice.
Yeah, sometimes it's just better to just do what you want to do instead of thinking, like overthinking a play that you want to make on the ice. One thing also is that all those three players play with speed, and Mike Sullivan, when he was brought in, like I swear they did a shift, right, of locker room, like chemistry, and when you look at the type of players that they brought in, especially on offense, a lot of those players were speedy, skilled, and that's ultimately what ended up giving them the cup, because all those same players played that similar style. Like Kessel was fast, Hagelin was fast, Guentzel, Rust, even Connor Sheary. Like they didn't need to be guys that were freaking like 6'5" and like hitting everyone alongside the boards. It was better to just
they didn't need some type of team like Washington where they had a different plane identity, where they were just like so like built and like so big that they just like they each kind of had like their own like hockey system.
That's sometimes it's just better to like have the puck on your stick and knowing what to do with the puck instead of going to hit everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you can be smart with the puck on your stick, you're gonna probably win more games, because you know if you're chasing the game the entire time, you're probably gonna lose it. I mean, you even see that with a lot of the lower teams today, like the Sens. They play like a very physical style, and they're like 26th in the league. So,
it's weird how it happens. To also like break this down, if any of our kind of viewers are confused, like throughout this time with the 2016-2017 team where the Pittsburgh Penguins went to win back-to-back Stanley Cups from 2015 to 2016 and now 2016 to 2017, which we're highlighting. I mean, in the first round, they beat out the Columbus Blue Jackets 4-1. Then they went on in the second round to beat the President Trophy winners, the Washington Capitals, 4-3. I do want to touch on that. The Eastern Conference Finals with the Ottawa Senators. Sorry, Damian. Penguins won the series 4-3. Then they went on to face the Stanley Cup Finals, the Nashville Predators. This was their first appearance ever in the Stanley Cup Finals, which is very impressive. And the Penguins ended up beating them 4-2 to be not so what a lot of people like to hear that are not Pittsburgh Penguins fans, but back-to-back Stanley Cup champions for the first time in 19 years. The best moment throughout that era was, I find, when the Pittsburgh has been known to beat the Washington Capitals and has had numbers on them for years. It was kind of like this adrenaline through the Washington is like, when is Alex Ovechkin ever going to win the Stanley Cup? And when is he ever going to break this curse of the Pittsburgh Penguins beating them and Sidney Crosby?
Thank God that he did it like right after they beat Pittsburgh beat Washington in 2017, because I felt like it was never going to happen. So.
Yeah, I think I kind of knew it was going to come, but it was just like a matter of when.
They always came close too. Like, it was never like a blowout. And like literally in this in the semifinals in 2017, Washington was down 3-1. They came back, and they made it a series for sure. I mean, they won game 5 4-2 and then game 6 5-2, but then eventually they couldn't get the offense in game 7 against the Penguins. I believe that Fleury was in net for that game. You could feel the difference between him and Holtby is that like Fleury actually like came to play, not came to play.
He just has like this extra experience.
Yeah, like a clutch factor in him. Like, uh-huh. He knows how to come to the rink. He knows how to win games because he's won before. And like he's a veteran goalie at this point in his career. Compared to Holtby, I think Holtby was still kind of new into his career and trying to not figure things out, but he was still young, so with not a lot of experience.
Yeah, and like throughout this as well, you know how you kind of touched on like how each series whenever they face the Washington Capitals is close. I mean, this went down to game 7. Pittsburgh won the first two games on the road, then of course Capitals battled back down 3-1 to force a game 7 in Washington. Kind of like when I was thinking through this, I was like, is this when the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to be out? I mean, Washington has home ice advantage. I mean, not that home ice advantage is like a big key factor, but you kind of think like, hey, is this when, like I said, Alex Ovechkin is going to come out on top over Sidney Crosby? I mean, the Penguins played that game that they knew best, obviously through Mike Sullivan's hockey identity, with being calm under pressure, using their depth down the lineup, and playing the game the right way was what the Penguins did in Game 7. And not forcing any of mistakes or turnovers, with Brian Rust and one of my favorite players that they got rid of, and Patrick Hornquist scored in a 2-0 win. Hornquist,
yeah, great.
He was great. I mean, man, I miss Hornquist. If they could ever get him back, he's just the type of guy that pumps the whole entire team. He's just got this aggressive and edginess that he is ready to battle every night. And he loves to get on the other team's skin. I feel like that's like his favorite thing, especially when he's in front of the net. That's a big key factor. And especially when you're looking to kind of do a deflection in order to score, he is like your guy.
Yeah, he was he always would fit into the play style as well, though, because he's pretty fast. Like, he knows what to do with the puck. So he was, but you always need a guy in front of the net, and he was the one, because I mean, Sheary and like Gensel, Crosby and Malkin are obviously going to be on the half wall. So you need someone to stand in front of the net, screen those goalies, and he was such an important factor to them. I mean, he didn't blow the doors down in the playoffs, 9 points in 19 games, but like,
it's not that he would be like a big point scorer, no, or like just, be on top, but he just would do the right
intangibles.
It's just, you know? That was just like a part of his job, and whenever he was given that opportunity or whenever he did that, he always got the job done. Like, you know, you rely on everyone throughout your lineup. And during that era, like, everyone did the job the right way. And with Mike Sullivan's playing identity, it just all fit together. Another best moment that I did want to touch on was when winning the first two games against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Penguins started off slow in game 3, allowing a goal 11 seconds into the game. Nice. And trailing 3-1 less than 7 minutes in.
That was game 1?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So another best moment during this 2016-27 era for the Pittsburgh Penguins was not just the Washington Capitals series, but the first round series against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, Penguins go up 2-0 in the series, but like, unfortunately, the Penguins started off slow in game three, allowing a goal of 11 seconds into the game and trailing 3-1 less than 7 minutes in. I mean, of course, with the Pittsburgh Penguins, like, all regular season, throughout all the injuries that they faced and going into the series, of course, the playing identity of Mike Sullivan, they stayed calm under pressure, relying on what they know best, and then they got and getting second period goals from Rustin Malkin to tie the game up 3-3. And I remember this game. And other than Jake Guentzel to break past the Blue Jackets and give his team a 4-3 lead with 8 minutes and 12 seconds remaining in the third. I remember watching this game and, oh my, what a game this was. Unfortunately, I remember this, Blue Jackets tied up late and forced overtime. But who other than rookie Jake Guentzel yet again completed his hat trick with an OT winner to give the Penguins a 3-0 series lead.
Was that the goal that Crosby was behind the net, he passed it out to the slot? Or was that the other one where he was the game-winning series goal, I think, that Guentzel scored?
No, it was the first one.
Oh, yeah? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, so it's just, like, incredible how you have all, like, these great memories that you want to touch on. I mean, the Washington series is great, the Columbus series is great, and Ottawa, Nashville. It was a great moment as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan to watch all of this happen. I also want to touch on my favorite player ever, Sidney Crosby. I mean, he was the MVP, basically missing the first six games of the regular season with another concussion, unfortunately, as he has suffered various concussions throughout his hockey career.
He missed a game in the playoffs though that year as well. I think it was something to do with Bat Niskanen too, right?
Yep.
I believe he got suspended, or was it the other way around? I think where Niskanen hit Crosby, I think.
Yeah, Niskanen did hit Crosby.
Yeah, and then so people were like freaking out because like Crosby's had like concussions and everything in the past. So, but like, yeah, he only missed one game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not surprising. I think people thought Crosby coming off the first six games of the regular season, he'd be, like, kind of slow to, like, get going. But, I mean, nothing other than Sid, you can never not count him out of it. With 15 goals in his first 16 games, I think he kind of set that bar that, like, hey, I'm back. I'm going to be the same player that I've always been, great as ever. He led the league in goals with 44 and finished tied for second in points with 89. He was named finalist for the Hart Trophy and the Ted Lindsay Award as the NHL's most outstanding player. After all the injuries he has faced with concussions and to have this kind of exceptional career, it does not surprise me. He is Sid the Kid. He had 20 points in the playoffs, 7 goals, 13 assists behind Malkin's 24 points.
Right, yeah, because Crosby, like, he fits that mold of just, like, you could be injured and stuff, but a lot of people are going to, like, step in and take your place for a couple games. And literally, Pittsburgh still has it today. They always seem to have injury problems because Malkin's probably out for 20 games of the year. Crosby's probably going to miss 10. Letang's probably going to miss 10. Guentzel's probably going to be injured. But they always seem to find these players, too, that, like, come up and just step up for them.
It's right? All about depth. And, yeah. Like, in the most important moments, when you have Guentzel, when you have Malkin, when you have Letang, when you have Crosby out, and, I mean, with them being veterans now, they always rely on the players from Brian Russ. They always have players that step up when their best players are out. And that kind of relies on, like, why they won those two back-to-back Stanley Cups. I mean, you have to, in order to win, I feel, the Stanley Cup these days, you have to have grit, you have to have speed, you have to have this depth throughout the lineup that if your best players go out, other players got to step up because there's no choice. It's the playoffs. I mean, anything's bound to happen, but you got to be ready to go. Rookie of the year, like I already said, I kind of want to touch on it a bit more, but Jake Guentzel scored 2 goals in his NHL debut on November 21st. But his career kind of really began to develop to a whole other level when he was played on the top line with Sidney Crosby. At this point, only being 22 years of age and now still being on Sidney Crosby's top line as his right winger, in 40 games, he had 16 goals, 17 assists, and a 19.8 shooting percentage. It's kind of like Jake Guentzel came out of nowhere. I mean, I never heard his name prior.
Yeah, to, right? Like, yeah. He was never considered like a first-round pick, or he was a third-round pick in 2013. So they did develop him properly. I mean, they put him in the NCAA for – it's weird because I'm looking at his stats here. 73 points in 60 games in the USHL. Like, that's pretty good. And I'm surprised that he was not picked in the first round. Maybe there was some sort of game that a lot of scouts didn't like. Maybe it was his skating or his work ethic maybe that – maybe like was a red flag, but spent 3 years at the University of Nebraska, developed perfectly there. Then they sent him to the AHL, right, for half the year, like destroyed the league, 42 points in 33 games. It was clear like he needed to get brought up, and like he was ready right away. And Wilkes-Barre, what I remember from that time is that they would always mention on the broadcast that the Wilkes-Barre system would always be played the same as the Pittsburgh system. So they'd make an easy transition into the NHL, and that's what happened with Guentzel. Like, he didn't miss a beat when he was placed on the top line because he was ready, and he already knew how both the coaches adapted and how they played a certain game.
Yeah, they knew, like, he knew the whole playing system. He knew the whole hockey identity, and then you had players like Connor Sheary coming up and, that's like, Brian guy. Rust. Yeah. Like, all these players through the Wilkes-Barre screen to come up and play with Pittsburgh to be as good as these top-notch players that they are now. It's just incredible to see in the foundation that the Pittsburgh Penguins organization has built. Also, what we kind of touched on even before Damian and I recorded this episode was with three game-winning goals in the playoffs, Jake Guentzel was like Nick Bonino, who had a very successful season when Penguins won the Cup in 2016. So it's kind of like Nick Bonino, and then Jake Guentzel came in and like took over Nick Bonino's replacement back in 2016. So it's pretty cool to see. To touch on next, we kind of want to take a deep dive into the future of the Pittsburgh Penguins now, like a kind of like a closer look. Damian, what are your thoughts? Do you think the Pittsburgh Penguins have another Stanley Cup under their sleeve with veterans now in the three-headed monster duo? I mean, do you think that they still have it in them?
It's something about this team that's different about past teams for some reason. It might be just because that Crosby and Malkin are getting older. They're still like basically the same players, but just it's something about, I think it's their goaltending this time. Like before, they always had the reliance on Fleury and Murray. You could go to either one of them. They could play like an entire round, but this time Tristan Jarry's having a very good season, I believe. He has like a .923 save percentage. And you look at last year, the 2021 playoffs, he kind of choked it, especially in Game 5 when he just gave up the puck to, I think it was Josh Bailey in Game 5 in the first round. That was the game-winning goal against. So, and Jarry did not play well in the playoffs. So the thing is, the backup, Casey DeSmith, he's okay, but he's not like a Matt Murray or Andre Fleury.
Yeah, like in the 2016-2017 era where they had Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray, two solid goaltenders. This season kind of has me worried because Tristan Jarry, all the questions remaining out of last year's playoffs when he kind of had that slump and it definitely wasn't good, which was very surprising for me with Tristan Jarry and kind of coming into the season, the questions is, will Tristan Jarry kind of still be the number one goaltender that the Penguins can rely on? We still have to wait and see. I mean, he's having a successful regular season, but it comes down to how well he's going to be able to perform when the going gets tough and when the playoffs come around. Also, like, relying on Casey DeSmith, I don't have much confidence in him, because you look at Marc-Andre Fleury, Matt Murray, it's just kind of not the same.
Just like an average backup, you know?
Yeah, we don't really have like that solid backup that if Tristan Jarry goes down, then who's going to step up? We don't have that same ability like what they did in 2016-2017. Also, like, you have the veterans and Sidney Crosby, Chris Letang, and Evgeny Malkin. Like, the question is, do they still have what is left in the tank to get the Penguins another Stanley Cup? Or
I think they're still the same players mostly, though. It's just a factor of like if they're going to be in the lineup, right? Like, it feels like,
are they going to be healthy?
Yeah, right, because it feels like Malkin's going to be injured like half the year now, and compared to like in 2017, it felt like maybe he'd be out for like a quarter of the year, but it seems every year Malkin's losing more and more games. So I don't know, but the thing is also is I think the one difference is maybe Justin Schultz. I mean, he was so good in those two runs for them that I feel like that was somewhat of a hole that they couldn't really fill. I mean, they have John Marino, but he's not really like a offensive defenseman. He's just a solid like two-way guy, but he's still kind of young as well. So
yeah, and like with this future outlook, like yes, they lock in a prospect pool. I mean, they make up for these young players obviously with like Jake Guentzel, Kasperi Kapanen, Teddy Bluger, John Marino, and obviously he just got traded Zach Aston-Reese with a great addition, I feel, with Richard Rakell going on with the second line as Evgeny Malkin's right winger. It's kind of what kind of worries me is like the question is can the three-headed monster duo stay healthy in time for when the playoffs come around? I mean, it's kind of like now with Crosby now being 34 years old, it's kind of like now he's teaching the youngsters who are coming up how to be a pro and to lead the team with example, which he's done throughout his whole career. I mean, all you can really ask for him is to like display leadership and upon the future core of the Pittsburgh Penguins, because it kind of seems like the door is closing right now and really like the future isn't as bleak as what kind of hockey analysts may believe or like what hockey fans should think. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like no matter what the future holds, I feel as me as a Pittsburgh fan, as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan and others, like you kind of should enjoy the time that they have left with their big star players, because I really think that Malkin, Letang, and Crosby only have like 3 to 4 seasons left in them.
I feel like we've been saying that for a while though, but yeah, like Malkin and Letang are UFAs this summer too, so
yeah.
I feel like Malkin would not go anywhere, but I feel like Letang, like who knows, you know, maybe he gets a 6-year deal with like 10 not 10 million like 7 million that he just can't reject. So
yeah, and I mean, you have, like, I guess next offseason, I mean, yeah, like, Evgeny Malkin, Brian Rust, and Jeff Carter.
Oh, yeah, Rust also is a...
Yeah, that's, like, what does the future hold for Brian Rust, right? I mean, I think that Malkin and Letang will both be reassigned. I don't think that will be a shocker. But also, thinking about, like, in the next seasons, if you have had, like, the 2023-24 season, I mean, Jason Zucker, Teddy Bluger, Radim Zahorna, and Brian Dumoulin will all become free agents.
I think Zucker will be gone by then, but Dumoulin will be definitely get a raise unless he's not as good as he is now. He's underrated for sure.
And I think just like with the Penguins organization and the coaching staff and like the new formation of Ron Hextall now being like the general manager, question is like how is this going to mold into what he's looking for throughout this team? I mean, management will need to keep an eye out on depth places if they want to still stay competitively. And I don't think like a lot of big moves will be made entirely soon, and it's kind of like coming into question just depending on Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Malkin's future. But I think that they will all stay as Pittsburgh Penguins for the rest of their hockey career.
Yeah, they'll be fine, but I think just the depth, like they'll always find depth. I feel like they have a good foundation. I feel like their pro scouting staff and their amateur developing staff is very good, because they like, they stick these players in the minors for years, right? And they can just come up with ease pretty much, because it's like they've played so much in the AHL that they can just jump up out of nowhere and just fit right in. And also down the middle, like anytime you're playing with Crosby and Malkin, you're probably not going to hurt them just playing the way that they want to play. So, yeah, that's the depth for the future of the Penguins, I feel like, is going to be pretty good. But we're talking about like the core and the high end players. I feel like there will be a steep drop off once Crosby and Malkin and Letang will hang them up.
It's going to be interesting to see what the future holds for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But for myself as a Pittsburgh fan, I hope to see another Stanley Cup be lifted with Crosby, Malkin, and Letang still in their veteran, still now being veteran. But at least lifting one more Stanley Cup would even make me feel a little even more exceptionally proud. To cap the second episode of the Back to the Point, from my co-host Damian Smith and myself, Kirsten Spade, we thank you for tuning in for another episode of Back to the Point podcast, episode 2, and covering the 2016-2017 era of the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll see you next time.